Welcome back to The Right Stuff, a podcast by the Gonzaga Writing Center, where we discuss the ins and outs, the why and how people write. Speaking of that, if you're looking for some tips on your next assignment or want a second set of eyes, drop by the Gonzaga Writing Center on the first floor of Foley Library, open Monday through Thursday, 10 through 8, Friday, 10 to 2 p.m., and Sunday, 5 to 10 p.m. Without further ado, here's the podcast. Well, I cannot thank you enough for coming on The Right Stuff. It's our fun podcast about writing. So
you're welcome. Thanks for asking me.
Yeah, it is a pleasure. Obviously, we're here with President Thane McCullough. How do you use writing as, you know, the president? How has writing serviced you in your journey to where you are today?
Well, writing is probably the primary vehicle by which people know what I think or what I care about. I've realized, because I've been in this job now quite a long time, that my writing goes in phases. It ebbs and wanes, and so there are periods of real intensive writing and construction of work, and then there are periods where maybe not as frequent. But I actually do quite a lot of writing, a lot of communicating, and I care a lot about what I say and how I say it, because I am attempting to, in many cases, evoke a response or invite participation or call people to maybe attend to something that I think is important. So writing is very, very dominant as a kind of mode of communication. The other thing I would say is I find that I need to write in order to really understand what I actually think. Mm-hmm. So somebody might say, well, what do you think about this? And I'm like, well, I have to think about it. But what I actually end up sometimes doing is writing to find out what I think. And so it's a very important tool for me too. And my thinking evolves as I begin to construct sentences and thoughts and try to string things together. So yeah, a lot of writing. Mm-hmm. That's probably mostly what I do.
I mean, I get some emails from you every once in a while, but mm-hmm. also I'm sure that you're writing just to tons of different audiences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for example, there's things that are going to be more visible to a given constituency than to others, but one of the projects that I continued, it was a tradition, was an annual Christmas message. And in the end, we end up sending out about 15 or 16,000 Christmas cards to various constituencies. And most of those are accompanied by a sort of what I call a standard message letter. But there are also many that have very specifically tailored messages and letters. And so in the run-up to really Thanksgiving, I spend a lot of time writing these various versions of letters, all of which are really intended to evoke a sense of, you know, the Christmas season is really important, and we want you to know we're thinking of you and that we're grateful for you. And messages of gratitude are probably the predominant messages that I'm involved with sending, just simply because there are so many people who do so much to try to support us. Mm-hmm. And so countless thank you letters go out. There are messages to prospective students that we create. There's messages to families. Probably one of the most significant periods, was COVID. I was looking back maybe 5-6 months ago, and just the sheer volume of communications that we issued during that period of time as we were trying to help people understand what we were planning to do and then what the protocols would be and all that stuff. That was a pretty significant undertaking.
Mm-hmm. Well, because everything's always changing, and you want to say that, well, we're on top of it.
Yeah.
We've got a plan, or maybe our plan just changed. But
yeah. That's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a very dynamic environment, so you have to be responsive, you know. And sometimes we miss, you know, we don't necessarily hit the tone, or we fail to really issue a message in a timely fashion or whatever. And that's another thing that's changed over time, is people expect a very rapid response on things. So if there's an incident on campus, they want to know about it as quickly as possible. And sometimes, you know, we don't know enough to be able to really issue something meaningful. Mm-hmm. And people don't, they don't, they're not very patient. They want to know, you know, what happened and what do we know and what are we going to do?
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, it takes time to try to figure out the answers to all those questions. But communication is super important. It's a way by which people know, you know, where you're at and what you're doing, and that you're kind of taking care of them or that you're attending to the issues. So I appreciate and understand that.
Mm-hmm.
Can be intense.
Yeah, and it never stops.
Yeah.
It just never stops. And sometimes in some of those kind of fast-paced, it's harder to collaborate or it's harder to get that feedback element, but it's such a crucial part to that process of writing and communicating. And how do you kind of implement that communicative element or that collaborative element in your writing?
Well, I think it's very important to say that, especially if it's a highly important message, I value the opinions and the perspectives of many other people. I have some go-to people, and then sometimes I drag other people into the process and ask for their input. I value criticism. I would prefer that people tell me honestly what they think and find something that they can improve upon, because that is very likely to improve the overall quality of what it is that we're saying. And I've often found that when I'm pressured to issue a statement or to issue some sort of a communication and I haven't circulated it to enough people, it indeed can ultimately result in something that's inadequate or that sort of fails to do sufficiently what it otherwise could have done. That's always a tension, because again, people in the face of certain situations, people want a more immediate response, but you know, some communications take time. Mm-hmm. And my experience is by and large, that it's better to take the time and do it well than to rush and then wish you had said something different.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I've done book chapters, I've done speeches, I've done presentations and commentary for articles, and so you know, it's writing has been a big part of what I've done for quite a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all the way back to, you know, the RA bulletin boards that you got to put up to make sure everybody knows the resources on campus.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that's another thing. You know, there's I don't know exactly who will be listening to the podcast, but what I would say is it's kind of weird to be in a position like this, because the job is one that I guess holds a lot of uniqueness and enigmatic characteristics. You know, I think many people say the president. But what does the president actually do? We're not actually sure most of the time, you know. And so, you know, I've been working continuously at Gonzaga for over 30 years in a variety of jobs. For me, it's just another job, but it's not just that for other people. And so trying to figure out what lenses people are looking at my work through has been a really interesting part of this, because mm-hmm. it feels like somehow in a fairly unique way, it's affected differently than any other in a position at the institution. And so, you know, are just trying to really get some testing around is it having the impact I hope it will, or is it not being effective is a little more challenging than people might expect.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, and I guess I'm curious kind of what the editing process might look like for you. I was writing something last night, and one of the strategies I always like to do is to kind of read it out loud. I hadn't done it for my own work in a little bit, but I read my work out loud. It was one of the stories. I think I was writing a story for the Bulletin.
Oh yeah.
I read it out loud. I was like, that sounds terrible. I don't. That's not going to fit the bill. Is there any kind of strategies that you implore when you're editing or you're working?
Yeah, I think one of the things that your question points to is kind of what I would call a rhetorical device. So a few years ago, a couple of faculty who were team teaching a course in rhetoric out of communication studies asked me to come and kind of do a guest lecture. And what they asked of me is if I would share maybe just a little bit about the different roles that I personify depending on different contexts within which I'm doing the work. So I shared three different examples for the class. And one example was I'm in Washington, D.C., meeting with a member of Congress. And I shared that, you know, I'm wearing a suit and tie. I have an American flag on my lapel. I'm, you know, definitely representing, using some of the symbols of office, if you will. And then a contrast was a pep rally in Las Vegas, where I actually have a fake Zag uniform and my rings, and I'm up on stage going, "Go Zags," and all that kind of stuff. And it couldn't be further from the experience that I think a congressperson would have.
Mm-hmm.
Nor the experience that I want to convey, right? So I think the same thing as you're referring to is the case for me, but it really depends on what is the message and what is the audience. Because if it's a graduation speech, for example, I will definitely read that out loud. If it's a faculty conference speech, I will read it out loud, not only because I want to make sense, but also because I'm practicing intonation, emphasis, some of the sort of verbal and nonverbal elements of the delivery of message. And so, it really depends a little bit on what the writing is intended to be for, or, you know, how it's going to be deployed. But certainly rehearsal and also asking other people to read and tell me their emotional reaction, not just editing in the sense of did I miss a comma, but how did this impact you? You know, because sometimes I'll say things, especially in the drafting phase, and they're like, "You do not want to say that," you know, and that's helpful. You know, mm-hmm. It's helpful to have that kind of feedback because it's evoked an emotional response in them, and maybe not the one I wanted. Maybe it is the one I wanted, but you know, sometimes the job is, and it would be for newspaper writing too, it's sometimes to provoke a little bit, right? It's sort of get people wound up a little bit on something. And so, you know, there are ways of doing that, but you can also cross lines. And anytime you try humor, you're in a very dangerous risky zone. So, you know, those are things that you really want to field test.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, absolutely. There's the editing process is both technical and somewhat emotional in my way of thinking.
And you know, you have probably a broader network than maybe Jack the Tutor would have in terms of, you know, being able to say, "Hey, can you go look at this?" Or because, you know, mm-hmm. students, they're so busy. But
yeah.
I'm sure you've got such a nice network that you could say, "Hey, do you mind looking at this? Or is this going to, can I bother you with this for just a second?"
Yeah, but you know, an interesting thing about that is that I actually have ask students to help me as well, particularly when it's something that I think students care about or are passionate about. And so, you know, that's an important constituency in the university, because one of the greatest challenges I think any communicator has is trying to make sure that people actually read or listen to what it is that they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all well and good that you want to tell people something, but one of my mentors, my advisors, told me once, you know, you have to draw the distinction between what you want to say and what they need to hear. Those are two different things. And so that I always try to remember that. Say, you know, this is a great thing. This is what you want to say. But is that really what they want to hear? What more specifically they need to hear,
mm-hmm.
and what they may need to hear from you?
Yeah. I want to pick your brain on something specific about kind of the graduation element, the speech that you're going to, or that, you know, you'll give every year. You give three graduation speeches for each school.
So I basically give perfunctory remarks at the law commencement. And part of that is because the nature of their ceremony is dominated by so many other speeches that I feel like I need to offer something, or sometimes I may even participate in the honoring of a person, but I don't really give a speech for law. For graduate and undergraduate, I do a little bit more. And mainly it is almost, I call it a farewell. It's a sort of a way of saying, look, you know, we hope that you come out of this experience understanding a number of things. One is that, you know, we're going to miss you. And another is that we hope that you'll stay in touch, you know. And so my messages have maybe not been as much the conventional commencement speech. I think it was in 2011, I actually gave the commencement address. And that was a different project because I was it. I'm the speaker. I remember it very clearly at the time because initially the response was, can't you get somebody else to, you know, I mean, really? I'm the cheapest speaker you ever had. We don't pay our speakers, by the way. So, you know, that also probably needs to be said. But I wanted to share a little bit with the graduating seniors out of my own personal experience of things that I thought it would be helpful for them to remember, to realize. And nobody was complaining at the end of it. That's not to say that we couldn't have found somebody, we could have, but it was a unique situation where I honestly didn't know how long I would have this job, and I really wanted to share with the seniors some messages. But that's a very difficult thing to do. Good graduations, memorable graduation speeches are almost impossible. So, that's a whole different deal.
Yeah. One of the things that I loved about the first ever commencement kind of speech that you gave was you opened it. You got up there, you were your first year as president, and you got up there, and you know, I hate to be quoting you in front of you, but you were talking about, you know, Gonzaga means many things to many different people, and you all come here for many different ways or for many different reasons, and you go, you know, maybe it's the community, maybe it's the people, maybe it's the food, and you just sit there with that pause for 5 or 6 seconds. And everybody starts to kind of, did you say that? What do you, and to open with, you mentioned that humor element is such a delicate balance, but you nailed it there. And especially in your first years, you know, given that, crushed that one.
You know, humor is such a important, self-deprecating humor, in particular, is such an important way of sort of lowering guards and connecting with people because, we all have stories, you know, and many of us have very fun stories, and those are elements and aspects of an individual that often you rarely get to experience unless you know them well. People don't usually lead with humor because it is risky, but I will say too that humility is a very important element in my way of thinking about it, of the work. And, you know, I always hope that people come away saying, well, you know, I didn't expect that to be the experience at all. I thought there would be this sort of pomposity and sense of self-importance. And, you know, that I mean, that just isn't, I mean, if I'm exuding that, something's wrong. So, you know, we administration, I am an administrator, and administration is about serving people. And I don't know everything. And I actually enjoy opportunities like this because I learn stuff. I mean, you may think, well, what could you be learning? But actually, the process of kind of interrogation, if you will, does allow you to become somewhat self-reflective. And that's where I think writing, good writing, should be in its own way, a dialectical process, right? We're not just writing for ourselves, right? That's not useful. I mean, we could journal, for example, but I mean, when most writing is intended to be a way of communicating, and I have always enjoyed and appreciated great writers. One of my heroes is former Chief Justice John Marshall of the early 1800s. He was an amazing writer. And the amazing thing about his writing was his precision and how parsimonious he was. He used no extra words, which is completely uncharacteristic of any lawyer or jurist that I've ever met. He was the most concise, and he must have labored so much. But he was Chief Justice for some 30, 36 years. He was an incredible contributor to our understanding of constitutional law and the purpose and meaning of the Supreme Court. And it was communication. That was what he was doing. His written opinions, you know, to this day, they're remarkable. So I've tried to study, but I am far from emulating the great writers. I tried, you know, to learn as much as I can.
Yeah.
But there's going back to the humility thing for a minute. It's just, to me, it feels like the quickest way to start connecting with people is through story, and especially very, you know, human interaction. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's sad, you know, sometimes it's funny, but the best commencement speakers have used humor in very self-deprecating ways. I invited a speaker not too many years ago who basically began his speech by making fun of me, and not just once, a series of
wow. Of
comments, all of which were incredibly funny. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it immensely, and it was also to a certain degree completely out of left field and unexpected, but it worked very, very well. And
the memorable aspect. Remember that.
It was memorable for me, at least. Really, really funny, and not in a mean way. One of his lines was, the president asked me to come and speak to you, and I was just so honored, and I was thinking to myself, oh my gosh, you know, I must be so important, and I must have so much to say, and there must be a reason that he wants me to do this. So he said, well, Thane, you know, what do you want me to talk about? And Thane said, about 10 to 12 minutes. You know, I mean, it was funny and it was true, but it was clearly not the answer. He was setting the audience up. And those are super fun because you're breaking down the barriers for a very brief interaction with people who otherwise don't know you.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody wants a boring speech at graduation. So
they're already there for 3.5 hours.
Or yeah, I mean, oh my gosh, there's absolutely.
A bit more bagpipes than everybody signed up for. But
yeah.
Well, I cannot thank you enough for coming on The Right Stuff today.
Well, you're welcome.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for asking me. I appreciate it.
Yeah. We'll see you next time, everybody.
Yeah.